2017.
Okay, sorry. Where's Rick?
It's in
Mike?
Storage.
Mike? No, I mean, is it on this side or that side? Which one this one? I was thinking of, like today I got some materials that has been kind of edited to put it in a book form. The seminars I gave, few seminars I gave on the art of dying. So when I was going through that, I was feeling that when you speak and when you write, it's not the same. Therefore, from my speech, if they want to form a book, it will not be. At least it won't be up to my liking. So I decided to write. And let us see. And see, in the past, practically everybody believed in reincarnation. Because the understanding was very clear that there are two things, there is soul and there is body, matter and spirit. But since today's world, due to the propaganda of this so-called science, do not accept the existence of the soul, this concept becomes very foreign and unacceptable to the people. That's why I was thinking that the first thing that is necessary is to establish the existence of the soul. Because unless and until one understands or recognizes the existence of the soul, he'll not be able to understand what is life, what is death, and the return of a spirit soul or spirit souls accepting a new body. On the other hand, when that understanding becomes clear, then everything becomes crystal clear. Everything becomes very, very easy to understand. The soul so we have to recognize that there are two things existing side by side in the material nature. One is the inert bodies and living bodies. Inert objects and living beings. And matter by nature is inert. So, you know, it's understandable that everything here is inert. The surprising thing is that some matter defies the law of matter. And some matter, some material bodies do not function like matter. They function in a way which is completely different from matter. And they are the living bodies, living beings. And we have to understand that these living beings are actually spiritual beings who have a body made of matter. So that is, we have to first establish. We have to make people understand. And to understand it is not very difficult, because we can see life follows a principle which is completely contradictory to the law of nature, or the contradictory to the nature of matter. Like their birth, growth, reproduction, change, decay, and finally dwindle. Now, these things don't happen in matter. We can say, well, when a material object is created, we can call it as birth of that. Yes, we can. But they don't grow. Like a material object, it will never grow. Like a wooden chair may sit there for hundreds of years, but it will not grow. Whereas a seed, when it falls on the ground, sprouts into a seedling, then it begins to grow. Then it has changes, like in summer, in spring, new leaves come. Then the summer, the tree is in fully lush and full of flowers. Then the fruits appear. Then in autumn, the leaves fall. Then again in summer, the new leaves come. Now this kind of change is not possible in any material object. Then reproduction. Even a tree, although it is, there is no difference between a chair and a tree, both are wood. But one chair or two chairs will not give birth to a third chair. Whereas the plant, the tree, has a seed in the fruits. And each seed has a tree inside. Like from each seed comes a tree, like reproduction. And then gradually they decay. Tree becomes old, and then finally the tree dies. Now these six symptoms of life is very distinct from inert matter. Now why does it happen? So to understand that, we have to accept the principle that the soul, the presence of the soul. So then you can explain what the soul is. And soul is actually the source of consciousness. The soul is the person, because the person is due to his consciousness. Life is consciousness. When we are unconscious, we do not know whether we are, whether we exist. But when we are conscious, then only we are aware of ourselves. The I is a matter of consciousness. So where does that consciousness come from? And now we have two options open. We can speculate, or we can take the information. Now if we look at all the scriptures will agree on this one point, the soul. All the religious concepts will accept that. So that soul, and although we are accepting the presence of the soul, but it can also be verified experimentally that it is because of the presence of the soul that the body is alive. So when the soul leaves the body becomes dead. Now in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna actually makes that point just in one verse. The body changes, but in spite of the change of the body, the person doesn't change. And therefore, the person is not the body. Rather, the body is like a dress, the outer external covering of the soul. And when the body becomes old, the soul leaves the body and takes up a new body. And that way, then the concept of death becomes very clear, that it's just a departure from the old body. So body to begin with is made of matter, therefore it is dead. Matter is inert, therefore body is dead. It's a dead body, due to the presence of the soul became alive. So when the soul leaves the body becomes dead again. And we can also see like how when the soul leaves the body, all the functions of the body stops. The body may have been terminally ill, the body may be in coma, but his one or two organs may not be functioning, but other organs are functioning, like his heart is beating, lungs is breathing, stomach is digesting, so all these functions are going on, although his brain may be stopped to function, or somebody may have cancer and some of his organs are completely destroyed. But still other organs keep on functioning. But why then all of a sudden all the organs simultaneously stop to function? That is what we have to consider. And isn't it natural to think that it's because the soul, every organ of the body functioning, every single organ is functioning, and as soon as the soul leaves the body, all of them stop. Just like when, as long as the driver is sitting in the car, is driving the car, all the different parts of the car is functioning. Sometimes some part may give some trouble, but other part keep on functioning. But when the driver switches off the ignition and walks out, then naturally all the parts of the car stop simultaneously. So similarly, the body is like a machine and the soul is the driver who is driving the machine. So when the driver leaves the body, all the functions of the body stops. Now I was also thinking how to do that. I was thinking to write a story book, probably a good idea will be somebody comes completely devastated because his dear one died. And that way we can develop the story, like the conversation.
Like in Jaiva Dharma, it is there in the form of a conversation, not the soul and the body.
Actually, most of the Vedic literatures are. Yeah, Jaiva Dharma is actually question answer. Any question? Do you have any question? Chandrasekhar, do you have any question?
Well, the other thing, that it's not very intelligent, the thing that came up to my mind is, if we are not the body, why is there such an intense attraction to the opposite sex, which is another dead body?
It's Maya. That's what illusory energy of the Lord is. You see, because one is identifying himself with the body, and the nature has made the arrangements of material bodies for different living entities, that's why this attraction. It's a nature's arrangement, illusory arrangement of nature. And there are two reasons. One reason is this is the arrangement of material nature to keep us bound to this material nature. And the other consideration is, the other consideration of attraction is procreation. Because You see, initially procreation was done through mind. Brahma was doing it through his mind. It was more on a subtle level. The procreation, like, procreation means what? A spirit soul getting a material body. So then came Manu and Satarupa, and they are the first couple, and from that couple the procreation started through copulation. Now this procreation is necessary for the maintenance of the creation. That was Brahma's concern, how to continue the progeny, how to fill up this universe with living entities, how to generate, how to manufacture these bodies. And so this is how this process actually started. And therefore, in order for procreation, this need was there, that the two opposite sex unite for the sake of procreation. And that caused that attraction, which will impel them to unite. So, as you're asking why there's this attraction, first of all, the attraction is because one is identifying himself with his body. It's an attraction for, it's a physical attraction, body's attraction. But the soul is beyond that. Soul's natural attraction is for Krishna. But when a soul forgets Krishna and becomes entangled in the material nature, then that attraction for Krishna is reflected in the form of the attraction for opposite sex.
What does the term part and parcel mean?
Part and parcel, part meaning that it is a part which is identical to the whole. It is a, it's an integral part of the whole. And in simple words we can say, like, it is a part that has the quality of the whole.
But when it's separated from the whole, it doesn't mean the whole is depleted from that part. It's still...
In the material nature it can be. In the material nature that's what happens when you take out something from a whole. It reduces. But spiritual is not that. Spiritual nature is nature being absolute. It's always absolute. Even if you take a part from the whole remains the same. Even if you take the whole remains the same. For example, infinity minus infinity. So infinity is actually a spiritual concept. Do you have any questions, Aditya?
I was thinking of what you're saying. you mentioned about writing it as a question and answer. Of course, the ideal situation, if we can, that is like in the History Channel, the way they present some of the, you know, so-called modern facts, like in a very graphic way, they would, more like, you know, this transformation of body, dehanashmanyata, the, you know, this whole thing, and that we are, like you said, kwasansijirnani, is an old cloth. And so this whole concept can actually be presented in that format, and I think that's one way where people will naturally feel attracted and take it very seriously. Because somehow I've seen a lot of people take that to be the understanding.
I didn't get that. Sorry. How do you present? How the presentation will be? Like,
see,
discovery,
just like this changing bodies, you know, in the form of like there's a voiceover from the back, and you know, you have, like, it's not actually, I don't know what it's called, a document.
You weren't talking
about
visualizing it.
Yeah, visualizing.
Okay.
I mean, you know, whichever way we do it, but the way they do it in the History Channel is like they have actually like an acting, but it's not really like a movie, but part of it is being acted, and I don't know what it's called, but in the docu feature, or I don't know what the term for it, but it's very attractive because even if it's not true, actually we know from a Vedic understanding, sometimes you want to, like I was telling you about Alexander's conquest, so they show the army moving in, and you know, like the whole concept is presented in a very interesting way. Now,
that is another thing, like, you know, when we have to have our own channel.
Yeah. And I was speaking from the point of view, you're saying the best way of presenting, you know, to write and present it. When you started, you said that, and I was thinking of how to present it. So I was thinking maybe this is, of course, this costs a lot of money and it's not easy to make.
No, that's not a book. That's a more the
it's a,
movie.
Yeah, audio visual presentation.
Yeah. That is a different dimension altogether. We have to have our, you know, own channel. Or you can, yeah, we can consider going into that, yeah.
Gurumaharaj, you mentioned that we shouldn't write anything that you say unless we have it taped in case we misinterpret.
Don't give me it as a quotation mark.
Yeah.
Quotation means you're,
exactly,
you're, you know, quoting me verbatim.
So I can do a paraphrase, I can say,
yeah, something like that.
And if we remember something that you said exactly, can you repeat it? I'm under the impression that like 80% at least of what I write, quote unquote, quoting Guru Maharaj, is exactly what you said. As a matter of fact, I take pride in that. Somehow I'm able to remember exactly what you said.
You're so expert in memorizing everything. Then why don't you memorize, you know, which account to send it to? Anyway, yeah, if you can, if you can, that's why I show it to me, then I can, you know. Because what I say there, when I said things, I said a lot more than what you wrote. That's what I'm saying. You know, you're just saying only, but there's a lot more than that went in there. So isn't it when you're quoting that you put the whole entire statement? Won't that be better? That's what I was suggesting.
So you're saying, Guruji, that way it may sound like out of context, even though it may not be wrong, but it may sound like it's out of context because the whole thing hasn't been quoted. That's what he's saying.
Yeah.
Incomplete, at least.
Yeah, incomplete.
I mean,